An electric car company linked to China's Evergrande is having trouble paying its suppliers and will no longer sell new shares on the Shanghai Stock Exchange. This comes as Evergrande's main real estate business is tanking. The company failed to make an $84 million interest payment last week and could soon default on its more than $300 billion in debt. And let's bring in NPR's Beijing correspondent Emily Fang with more. Welcome back.
Hey, Tanya. Thanks for having me.
The Evergrande Group has been trying to sell part of its stake in the electric car company to help pay off some of its debt. How do the electric car makers' financial issues mirror Evergrande as a whole?
The issues that they're having stem completely from the group's larger financial deficits. And the problem with the car company in particular is that they don't have as many working prototypes as they had hoped. So there's not much working product to show that this is a valuable company and then to sell that to another electronic car maker. Meanwhile, you're also buying into the risks of the bigger group. And those risks are that they have, as you mentioned, more than $300 billion in liabilities and overall debts. They still have a bunch of bond interest payments that they're scheduled to make. They are set to default in at least one of them. And so it's unclear how Evergrande is going to be wrapped up. It's almost certain that it will be allowed to go bankrupt. But the question is, what happens to the people Evergrande owes?
Right. Now wealthy investors and others who put their money into Evergrande are demanding their money back. What are the potential ripple effects here?
One thing is the investors who put money into Evergrande are not always wealthy. These are often retail investors, so just regular individuals who may have bought financial products or bought shares in Evergrande or bought apartments that Evergrande was selling, and now Evergrande has no money to finish building those units. So these are average people, for the most part, who are now asking for their money back. And a big chunk of the debt that Evergrande owes is not just to banks, but it's to other companies. So these are construction companies and contractors. These are people who provided building materials. And they're now facing bankruptcy and cannot pay their workers because they're owed, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars by Evergrande.
There have been protests in China, right, from people affected by the company's crisis, by suppliers, investors, and basically people who bought homes. How is the government handling this?
They've been trying to negotiate on behalf of these investors. Local governments have dispatched officials who are directly working with local Evergrande subsidiaries to, one, make sure that people get their money back if they invested money, and two, if people bought houses already, that those units are then built in the future, even if that means another developer has to step in and take on that project. Home buyers, many of whom I've interviewed, are astonishingly optimistic because in the past, given the Chinese state's wariness about protests, usually when there is some uncertainty about a developer going belly up, the government will step in, will bail them out, and will make sure those houses are built. So there's that moral hazard expectation that's built into the Evergrande crisis. But this time, I think, will be a little bit different. I think the government will let Evergrande default. The question is how smooth that default will be and how wide the ripple effects will travel.
Right. Some experts have expressed concern that Evergrande's financial issues could result in major consequences for the global markets, not unlike what happened with the Lehman Brothers when they filed for bankruptcy back in 2008. How quickly could something like that happen?
Chinese regulators and policymakers are very, very aware of Evergrande, and they're very conscious that Evergrande could lead to depressed property sales that could then lead other developers to default. So they will be stepping in the next few weeks to tamp down those fears. They likely will press state-owned companies to buy off some of Evergrande's assets and unfinished projects, and they'll likely pressure state-owned banks to hoover up some of that bad debt that Evergrande cannot pay back. So things are going to hurt. China's working with a much slower economy, lower retail sales, property sales that were already dipping because of the COVID epidemic even before Evergrande. But they are going to make sure that the pain doesn't pass through the rest of the Chinese economy. That being said, they want Evergrande to serve as an example to other developers. This is the end of debt-fueled infrastructure building that has stimulated the Chinese economy for the last two decades.
Emily, before we let you go, over the weekend, China, Canada, and the United States completed this prisoner swap that sent an executive for Chinese tech giant Huawei back to China in return for a Canadian diplomat and entrepreneur. What do we know about that exchange?
The Chinese executive you mentioned, Meng Wanzhou, landed back in China Saturday night in China time. To immense fanfare, Huawei and the local government arranged a delegation to meet her. She gave a speech on the tarmac in which she was fighting back tears and she thanked the Chinese Communist Party and the motherland for caring for her and bringing her back. And she's become this nationalist hero. So you've seen this really amazing divergence in how the two countries are perceiving the same issue. In China, this is an example of China standing up to U.S. bullying. And in Canada and the U.S. and other countries that are American allies, I think this case is being seen with a lot of moral disgust that somehow hostage diplomacy is now the de facto tactic China uses to bring back its citizens.
That's NPR Beijing correspondent Emily Fang. As always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tanya.